Richard P. McBrien, Chairman, Department of Theology, University of Notre Dame, etc. Dear Father McBrien, thank you for your warm and thoughtful letter of December 6th. Period. I too recall with warm memories our meeting in November 1980 at the time of the inauguration of the Abrams Library Collection at Notre Dame. Paragraph. I was delighted to learn that Newton Minow and Lester Crown incidentally, comma, both of whom are members of the American Jewish Committee, hyphen, have endowed a program in your theology department to foster Jewish hyphen Catholic dialogue and understanding, period. I can think of no more influential institution in which such an important activity could be established. Period, paragraph. Last week, I had the pleasure of having lunch with Ed and Ann Abrams of Atlanta, period. They have talked to me about their interest in strengthening such activity at Notre Dame, period. They're planning to try to arrange a meeting between Father Ted, themselves and myself to explore alternative possibilities for what they have in mind, period. I'm sure that they will want to discuss this important matter with you as well. Period, paragraph. With regard to future possibilities and program, comma, I would suggest that you may want to consider convening a national consultation on the theme of, quote, the sanctity of human life, hyphen, Catholic and Jewish perspectives, period, end quote. This moral and theological issue, comma, I believe, comma, is critically important in today's world, especially in light of the devaluation of the human personality as created in the sacred image of God, period, the rise in crime, comma, violence, comma, terrorism, comma, massacres, virtually throughout the entire world, reflects how profound is the decline of reverence for life and the devastating human consequences that flow from that dehumanization, period. I enclose a copy of a paper that I delivered on this theme at a joint meeting with the Lutheran World Federation, period, paragraph. If you are interested in organizing such a consultation, comma, I would be happy to have the American Jewish Committee co-sponsor it with you and carry joint responsibilities for its planning, comma, financing, comma, etc. period paragraph. With warmest, I would very much appreciate having your response to this idea. A period paragraph with warmest personal good wishes for a healthy and above all peaceful holy season. I am cordially yours. Sign my name. A carbon copy to Father Ted Hesburgh and carbon copy to Ed Abrams. Blind carbon copy to Donald Feldstein, Bill Trostin, Bob Jacobs, Selma Hirsch, Mort Yarman.
This is a letter to the Reverend Lyons. This is a letter to the Reverend James R. Lyons, Director of the Ecumenical Institute for Jewish Christian Studies. Dear Jim, thanks very much for your warm and thoughtful letter of December 14th, period paragraph. I too look forward with much pleasure to taking part in the lecture series on the Good Friday, capital G, capital F theme, period paragraph. The outline of the program looks fine. Period. I simply would suggest the addition of the name of the American Jewish Committee. Yeah. Add the name of the American Jewish Committee to that of the National Institute for Catholic-Jewish Education, period. I have indicated that on the program, period paragraph. I was delighted to learn that the Archdiocese of Detroit has contributed a grant to publish these lectures, period paragraph. I have written a major paper on this theme, which I need to review for publication purposes. Period. I will certainly send this to you before February 1st. Period paragraph. As I indicated to Sister Anne Marie during our last telephone conversation, it would be useful thing to plan a press conference on March 8th, at which principal people who are responsible for the Samuel and Isabel Friedman grant to the conference will be present, period. I will be in touch with you shortly, as soon as we have positive response from the bank leadership that made available the trust grant, period paragraph, with warmest personal good wishes for a healthy and above all a peaceful holy season. I am cordially yours, sign my name. A carbon copy to Sister Anne Marie Erse, Sherwood Sandweiss, a blind carbon copy to Maxwell Katzen, as well as to Donald Feldstein. It was a letter to Mr. Maxwell Katzen. Dear Mr. Katzen, I enjoyed very much our last telephone conversation, period paragraph. From close, please find a copy of my letter my letter to Reverend James Lyons, of the Ecumenical Institute for Jewish Christian Relations, period. The enclosed correspondence, as well as an outline of the program, indicate that the Samuel and Isabella Friedman Charitable Trust will be prominently acknowledged on the printed program. Period paragraph. I do await word from you as to whether you and your associates will be free to take part in a press conference that we could plan on March 8th to announce the grant, as well as to introduce Sister Anne Marie Erse to the media. Period paragraph. With warmest good wishes for a happy and healthy Hanukkah, I am cordially yours. Sign my name. Enclose copies of the Lyons correspondence on the program. Period.
This is a letter to Mr. Lawrence S. Phillips, President, Van Heusen Corporation, etc. Dear Larry, I enjoyed our telephone conversation the other day. Paragraph. Since our talking, I have contacted the International Rescue Committee and have asked them to arrange for you to be received by the appropriate government and refugee officials in Thailand, period. Al Kastner of the IRC staff told me that he would contact you in order to make the necessary arrangements, period, paragraph. In addition, I have spoken with Ambassador Victor Harel of the Israel Embassy, period. As soon as I have your exact travel schedule, the Israel Embassy in Washington will cable their embassies in Bangkok and Rangoon and will arrange for you to be received by the Israel ambassadors of both those countries. Period. You will find it interesting, I think, to obtain their learn their views on the situation in both those countries. Both those countries. Period. Paragraph. Thank you for suggesting my meeting with the people interested in the tribute to Denmark. Period. I am meeting with Dr. Falik, F-A-L-I-K, and with Miss Anne Rofi on December 22nd to discuss their project. Period. Paragraph. Please give me a ring when you return from London. Period. Paragraph. With warmest good wishes from Georgette and myself for a healthy and above all a peaceful new year. Cordially as ever, sign my name. Line carbon copy to Donald Feldstein and Bob Jacobs and Mort Yarman. Also a blind carbon copy to Georgette.
Initial resolution submitted by the Antiochian Orthodox Church, which was an out-and-out anti-Israel, pro-PLO document calling a condemning Israel for human rights violations, calling on the United States to come up with an obligation, etc. We scotched that. And we weren't the only ones, the other Jewish organizations. Then what they did was they appointed this new women investigatory panel. Now, the panel went, one thing we did was we helped open it up, so the panel went to all of the Middle East. At their request, we, India in particular, coordinated their itinerary in Israel. In addition to Israel, they went to Syria, Lebanon, and Egypt, and Jordan. But the original document was drafted not by the panel, but by the Middle East Task Force of the NCC, which is the professional, and then some of the findings of the panel were filtered into the Middle East. So they changed that.
That's what I mean. They didn't.
So there's no doubt that the final resolution was a much better one, a much more benign one than the original.
Let me summarize it this way. The rhetoric, three-quarters of the document is a significant improvement of what the earlier version was. The rhetoric is better. The language of goodwill is much better. The problem for us is that the bottom-line political position tried to reconcile incommensurable positions. They tried to give the Jews everything they thought the Jews wanted. They tried to give the PLO everything the PLO wanted, and you can't do that.
Well,
very commendable position. And somehow they hope they could sleep that fast. And it just didn't happen that way. And the PLO wasn't much happier with that position than we were either.
By the way, we should point out that the day after they passed that resolution, they passed the resolution condemning anti-Semitism and the upsurge of anti-Semitism in the United States.
I think what we should do, Jim Rudin gave a report this afternoon at the Board of Governors on the Madrid meeting on human rights. Very, very interesting, and I think we should ask Jim at this point. We're going to skip item 5 on the agenda and skip right over to number 6 and ask Jim to give us as brief a report, but as succinct and as interesting as this afternoon.
If I can move you all away from 475 Riverside Drive and the Biltmore Hotel where the NCCB to Madrid and to the Vatican. In 1977, the National Derivatives Task Force on Soviet Union sent a 6-person delegation to the Belgrade Compliance Council in the Vatican. For initiates, these compliance meetings were held every 3 years to raise the 35 governments to sign the Helsinki Final Act. They did report cards of how good little boys and girls they were in fulfilling the three provisions in the Helsinki Final Act. Two things have to be said right away. It was not a treaty. The Senate never approved it. It was a final act in which 34 countries and the Vatican, my Protestant friends always tell me to say it that way, 34 countries and the Vatican signed it. The Interreligious Task Force on Soviet Jewry sent another delegation during Thanksgiving, 2 weeks ago, to Madrid, where the compliance conference was being held, and again on the Vatican on human rights conditions of the Soviet Jews. Of the 7 who went, 5 had been to Belgrade and Vatican. 3 Protestants, United Presbyterians, Lutheran, Church in America, American Baptist Churches, 3 Catholics, and myself. Black and white, men and women, clergy and lay, including the Dean of the University of Washington Law School from Seattle. Because everything had gotten so bad in the Soviet Union since 1977, just tick off their names, and you know what's bad, Sharansky, Sakharov, Slavak, 7 Pentecostals in the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, the Olympic Game boycott, and an aging, oligarchy in the Kremlin. The West, and even neutral countries like Malta and Liechtenstein and others, had gotten their act together and were much more forthright about human rights and religious liberty. Let me say parenthetically what everyone's political views. It may be, this is my own personal opinion, having been in Madrid, that Jimmy Carter's greatest legacy historically will be human rights. Yes, he buckled under in many areas. Yes, he capitulated. But the very fact that people who don't want to talk about human rights, diplomats, are talking about it, and talking about it seriously, may be President Carter's greatest legacy. I don't mean that decision. If it was left to them, many of the delegates are embarrassed and really don't want to talk about it. The U.S. delegation 77 was led by Arthur Goldberg, who shocked everyone by naming 7 names of prisoners or activists in the Soviet Union. The United States was the only country that named names in 77. By 1980, the United States was naming 27 names, including Slavak, Sharansky, Sakharov, Berlovsky, and many others. And the U.S. was joined by Sweden, the U.K., and Holland, which is a great step forward. Most countries, as you know, do not want to name a specific name at a public international meeting. The head of the U.S. delegation was really Max Cantlemann, some of you know. Max, the reception we met him, was an extraordinary, is an extraordinary gift to the leader, and he provided us with many, many wonderful things that the interreligious task force on Soviet Jewry. Our own Jerry Shestack, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. also gave a very important paper in Indian language. We presented an aid memoir. Aid memoir is a fancy word in Yiddish, the word is position paper. I like the word aid memoir, so I use it. The copy of it is in your package. The Interreligious Task Force outlined 6 major points that we pressed with our own names attached to it. Freedom of reunification of families, that's a euphemism for Jewish emigration out of the Soviet Union, an end to official anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union, which is never very virile now, the right to meet Christians and Jews, that is, for outsiders to come into the Soviet Union, Helsinki Final Act Advisory Board, and one of the members of our delegation, Pastor John Steinbruch, whom some of you know from Washington, very great activist for Soviet Jewry, had been hassled by the KGB last April when he wanted to leave the Christian Review in Kiev, and also in Leningrad, and that's in the Helsinki Final Act, the right of co-religious to meet. The fourth point was the right to educate your children, Muslim, Christian, or Jewish, in your own traditions, against the law right now in the Soviet Union, to provide religious education under the age of 18. Houses of worship was our fifth point, to keep them maintained, not in disrepair. There are so few synagogues, and only one Catholic church, for instance, in all of Leningrad. And finally, the right to employment, which is guaranteed under many international covenants signed by the Soviet Union. It's very important because in the Soviet Union, if you don't have a job, such as Joseph Begun and others, you can be arrested for being a parasite, and you go to jail or you're exiled because you're an economic parasite, even though you're guaranteed the right to employment. We got through to all 35 heads of the delegation. They all received our aid memoir. And I said this at the Board of Governors, and I want to explain just briefly to this group, who especially appreciate it. The Europeans I found both in Belgrade and again in Madrid simply do not know what to make. I told this to Mona before. Don't know what to make of an interreligious, interracial delegation. We take it all for granted. But for them, it is something startling, even for the British. They say, do you mean you all room at the same hotel? Yes, we do. I said, men with men, women with women. Do you mean that you're all here for the same purpose? Yes. Do you mean that you all knew each other before you came to Spain? Yes. And again, the Mark has made the point again and again that it's a sui generis in the United States. It's a tender plan. This interreligious cooperation, don't take it for granted. It blows their minds, and even the Danes and the Swedes didn't know quite how to handle it. They're used to a Jewish group, they're used to a Protestant group, they're used to Catholic groups, they're used to labor groups, but they're not used to interracial, interreligious groups. We had official meetings with the Danes, the Swedes, who were concerned about Raoul Wallenberg, who would be 68 if he's alive today. His half-sister was there, who went to Madrid, with the UK and with West Germany. The West German was the longest, lasting 2 hours. We had unofficial meetings with the Hungarians whom we met in Belgrade, the Yugoslavians, the Czechs, because one of our sisters in our group speaks Czech, she's in Chicago, but her family's from Czechoslovakia, and with the representative of the Soviet Union, whom Sister Ann and I met. We did get through, I think, because it was clear that the American Jewish Committee is central in the area of human rights and religious liberty, and because of our commitment to religious liberty, not only for Jews, but for Christians as well. It was a bizarre meeting. If you can picture a room this size, over in the corner is Avital Sharansky, the wife of Anatoly Sharansky. In this corner, 14 or 15 Soviet delegates going to a meeting, and over here is the half-sister of Raoul Wallenberg, all in the same room, and they all know exactly who each other is, and they all are sort of waltzing around one another. Perhaps the dramatic moment for us was to hear about the congressional delegation that met with the Soviets. The congressional delegation included a man we're honoring tomorrow. I hope all of you will come at 4 o'clock, Robert Ryan. Senator Pell from Rhode Island was there, Millicent Fenwick, Ben Gilman, Henry Waxman from California, Lapache from Niagara Falls, another Republican, a bipartisan commission of U.S. Congress arrived, and leaving the 33 others behind, the Soviets and the U.S. came together for a coffee on a Wednesday morning before Thanksgiving. It was the last 1 hour. It went over 3.5 hours. And people like Gilman and Ryan and Senator Pell and Dante himself in Florida told us as soon as it was over that it was hardball, eye to eye, eyeball to eyeball, very rough meetings. Because, and here you can say it very briefly, the Soviets said, you people in the West are hung up over individual rights. And all you care about are individual rights. And they said, our country is based on human rights, group rights. When you're born, you have a right to a job. You have a right to education in the Soviet Union. You have a right to total health care. You have a right to total pension. And you have a right to housing. And therefore, no human rights can be denied to you because by being part of the state, you are contributing to human rights. Where people like Bob Dryden and Dante Cassell and Claiborne Pell and Millicent Fenwick and Ben Gilman took them on. But you really had a crossover, which is a very serious issue. Group rights versus individual rights. Finally, I took the group to the synagogue in Madrid, and for many of them it was the high point of their visit there. The fact that a synagogue was closed from 1492 to 1968. The security there is very, very rough, and some of you have been know what it's like. And then on to the Vatican, where we had very successful meetings with Justice of Peace, the Catholic Jewish Secretary, and the Secretary of State. Since the Vatican signed the Helsinki Final Act, the Christians in our group were adamant that the Vatican take a much more positive stance. They said simply, send us your names privately, and we will intervene, but we will not intervene publicly, and we will not intervene by name, or Christians or Jews. Whatever one may say about the Madrid Conference, and it's going to go on until March, by the way, it's an important instrumentality. And the task force remains an important instrumentality as a way of getting in there. One of the few leverage factors we have on the Soviet Union, the big fear expressed was that with the new administration, they're going to take a break on the 19th next week and come back on the 27th of January. But the new American administration will not even in a rhetorical way be as committed to human rights as the president. Republicans who were there denied that, but there was a good feeling that if the new administration backs up on human rights, many of our allies would be, I think, privately relieved, but then they won't have to be on the front line of human rights anymore. But I think the task force continues to be an important set of meetings. I hope you'll read our little three-page statement. It isn't very long. And perhaps the high point came again in the synagogue when Charles Smith, the black man, who was the dean of the Washington Law School in Seattle, said that he took this about it, that the perseverance of Jews and the persistence and the survival of Jews in a country like Spain represents for him a salute to the human spirit. Then he tried to find a Protestant church, and that wasn't very easy either. Madrid has a long way to go in the area of religious liberty as well. Getting there, that's another story.
Jim, thank you very, very much. And I think, will you stay on it for some people who want to ask questions, but I think let's adjourn the formal part of the meeting at this point. And I thank you all very, very much for coming. See you again soon.
The warmest good wishes. I am cordially yours. Sign my name and close the German press release. Letter addressed to Dr. J. Kuss Schoenfeld, General Secretary of the International Council of Christians and Jews.
Done with people who are available to do those things. I can't get too much more specific think about another 15 minutes then. Wait a minute, there's not going to be any lunch today. I can't live without lunch. What can I do? Okay, we'll take about 4 or 5 more questions.
Dorothy Steinberg, Malvern, Long Island. I'd like to comment on 2 of the answers that you had to the dilemma. The first one about the foster grandparents. The first one about the foster grandparents who were going to help out in the community. In the general New York, Long Island area, our foster grandparents are all in Florida. As soon as they retire, they move out of the community, and this is one of the tremendous problems that we are having in the New York area. We can't count on any retired people because they're all in Florida. The second thing about the Cabarellas. In our congregation, we have 8 or 9 Cabarellas, but they are social in terms of social and study. They meet once a month in each other's home, but they don't want their children involved in this. The only time the children are invited is when a particular Kabbalah has a Seder in the synagogue, or maybe for Hanukkah or Purim. But to use the Kabbalah to do what this man called the business of the community or the business of the synagogue, that doesn't mainly work.
Now, I wasn't suggesting that the Kabbalah do the business of the synagogue. I was just saying that the business of the synagogue can sometimes be done in homes, and that that would humanize it. That's all I was saying. And as far as the foster grandparents, I think you exaggerate a little bit. They aren't all in Florida. There are some in every community that are there, or at least, all right, I'll speak about Philadelphia. There are in Philadelphia, the Federation alone runs tremendous housing projects for the elderly, which are filled with people, and many of them, if they could only be chauffeured to, you know, where they had to go, if you pay their car fare and whatever, they come in regularly and work in the Federation building and do various other kinds of things. I was also suggesting that synagogues help organize the ones who are around, particularly widows. You know, unfortunately, Jewish men are very precious, and we lose them early. They die on the average of 7 to 8 years younger than Jewish women. And so it just happens in the community that we have many more elderly women than men. And many of them are experts in child care, and they are very giving and facilitating people. That is what they were trained to do, and they are really experts at it. And I think to bring them into the synagogue, to the aides in the nursery school, to help with those families who want to have child care in the home, for the synagogue to help do a matching service, to bring people together, would be a terrific thing. Well, I'm not so sure that if the challenge were put to them and if they were facilitated in doing it, so that what they had to do was the caring and the loving part and not worry about the getting there and not have it cost them at least to do it, I think that there are some things that could be worked out. I don't think it's too utopian.
Robbie Summers, Cliffside Park, New Jersey. I think that Rella made a very interesting point in that most synagogues really have to begin to think through new forms in terms of the way the synagogue business has to work. I know that there's one synagogue in South New Jersey that now has couples to serve as vice presidents together. I think that it's a way in which you can provide the couple opportunity to spend time together and work with other couples, since most synagogues are couple-oriented. And there are very few singles in synagogues other than widows and divorcees. Also, it's another issue. And also, I think that, at least in my synagogue, which is a very small congregation of 130 family units, some meetings of the congregation do take place in people's homes, and there is the socializing element that does become very important. So it's not sterile in the synagogue, which the synagogue often does become, but people can be somehow comfortable and familiar by spending an evening in somebody else's home. And I think that the building really is only a tool, and to get outside the building can often enhance the congregation. Thank you.
How many more people want to speak? We've got 2 more hands. Why don't you come forward next?
I'm Roberta Winter from
be Bobby, but then when I established my own career, I became Ms. Roberta Winter. And I'm finding that the women's movement and feminism is in tremendous flux, a tremendous change, and it's very, sometimes it's high, sometimes it's moving very quickly now, and I think that that within a few years it should stabilize a little bit so that it shouldn't become as much of an issue and as dominant as we're seeing right now. But while it is dominant, I think that it's important for the rabbi and his wife to feel as comfortable as they can with feminism and with the dual career family and with the rabbi's wife being able to use herself to her full potential and ability, wherever that may be, and to exert leadership within the community as much as they can to sort of feel what the community is going through and to try to mobilize them into different areas that would meet their needs the greatest, depending on what their particular need may be. And I also feel that a rabbi's wife who uses herself professionally and nationally to her best potential within the community only enhances the rabbi's position within that community. And I think that the community receives a great deal of stature and satisfaction from seeing the rabbi's wife prominently used within a certain professional or business or within a certain context within the community that they can relate to and get satisfaction from. I personally am involved in doing some pioneer geriatric work in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I'm in the media quite a bit. I was interviewed by two media networks on the same day before we left Tulsa, and I had an interview in the Tulsa Jewish Review with the modern Rebbetzin, you know, doing career and Rebbetzining both together, and it works, you know. And I think that it increases the stature of the rabbi in the community to have a valid wife who can fulfill herself, and I think it gives the community great strength then, and it gives a lot of wives who are ambivalent about where they're going to go increased strength to begin maximizing their potential so that they're not so neurotically involved in the house and in shopping and in going to luncheons and in buying the latest dress. And I think it increases the whole functional level of the community if it's used well.
I just feel that I must make one statement, and that is that I am for option for women and men. And it seems to me that whatever the couple, whether it's the rabbi, the rabbinic couple, or whether it's anybody else, feels comfortable with and works out, we ought to try to support it if it's, you know, at all reasonable to support it. And that if, in the case of a rabbi and spouse, the spouse feels that the greatest fulfillment in their life at that time is working in the congregation and helping in the job is the two-person career at that time, then I say power to the sisters in that. And I think that people ought to have two rights. Number one, to do what they feel comfortable in at that time in their life. And number two, to change. And not to be called inconsistent or hypocritical because they want to change at a certain point. And so I think it's important that that point be made because too often the women's movement is criticized for pushing only one model, and I think there are very many valid models.
Joel Schwab, Cincinnati, Ohio. Listening to Ellen Munson. First of all, when I came here, I thought I'd learn something about how to be a rabbi, and I sat here and was commenting to Rabbi Queen, but he's talking about our family, which, of course, happened to many of us. I wanted to second Rabbi Munson's whole presentation, especially the idea of the rabbi having to make a choice in what he's doing. He has to move into a situation where he's going to be more of a father, more at home, less available to the congregation. That can be done in a number of ways. The way we've worked it out is for me to pattern out a day off. There's one day my wife's going to have a whole day free. She's in school right now, so that's even more flexible. And then now there's one morning that I'll also pick up and simply not schedule anything. That's a home day and that's sermon day and class preparation day and nothing else at home. Listen, I
hear that there are rabbis who get to spend a day not doing any shul work. It doesn't happen to me. So on that one day, I'm at least home with the babysitter, and I do the things that I can do that I don't have to do in the office for the appointment. We have formed in our congregation a young couples club. I'm a Kabul Rasai patient. It's much more of a social club than a learning club, but we're moving it towards study. It is made up essentially of couples like us at our age, at our period in professional development, children the same age, and we've learned a great deal from each other. First of all, we have, and what we've done is, as the young couples have coalesced to the point where we have really dealt with all four of the problems, the four dilemmas, the five dilemmas that we talked about earlier. We have taken care of overload to the extent that not only do we have, we're at the point where we don't have to worry about just two people's schedule as far as taking care of children. We have four people, or six people, or eight people whose schedules we can work around so that somebody who's going to be home, me, wife, the psychologist, doc, and her psychiatrist, father, husband. That was a good psychological flip. One of us is going to be home, and the babies end up at everybody's house so that we don't have to worry about babysitting. Some of the overload is taken. We eat together. Again, some of the overload is taken. Second, the problem of the guilt that goes along with these changing roles, we have reinforced each other that this is not something unnormative. This is normative for all of us. We have made a social network out of these people. We meet at least once a month socially and sometimes more often, especially on Shabbos, so that we've got friends who have a lot, we have a lot in common with, and we're very satisfied that way. And most importantly, as far as the problems of the role cycle we talked about, we're able to reinforce, we're able to talk to each other. This can be done, I think, in many synagogues, if not most synagogues, with the help of somebody who really pushes us to get it done. Finally, the idea of couples on board. In our synagogue, we do have couples on the Board of Education. And we have a much better attendance now than we ever did before, because we do have couples rather than individuals. There is some thought, even in our very traditional synagogue, of doing this on more boards. I don't think it's